Guest for this episode is translator Una Stransky. In this episode, she spoke about her translation of The House on Via Gemito, which is longlisted for International Booker 2024. The House on Via Gemito is originally written by famous Italian author Domenico Sternone. Una Stransky's translations from the Italian include works by Montale, Dell'Oro, Pontigia, Lucarelli, Spaziani, Saviano, and Pope Francis. Shorter translations have appeared in a number of literary reviews, including the New England Review, Exchanges, the Massachusetts Review, the Southern Humanities Review, and the Literary Review. Her publications have received the Silver Dagger Award and, on two occasions, UK Pen Translates grants. Born in Paris, Una grew up in Beirut, Jeddah, London, and Boston. She studied comparative literature at Mills College, UC Berkeley, and the Università di Firenze, and she obtained a master's degree in Italian from Columbia University. She currently lives in Italy. Good evening and welcome to Harshaniyam, Una.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
So at the outset, congratulations on getting longlisted for the International Booker 2024.
Thank you.
So how did you develop an interest in Italian language?
Well, actually, in a very roundabout way, the logical language for me to translate from would have been French. I was born in Paris, to American parents. I grew up hearing and speaking French at home. I studied French at all the American schools that I attended in the various places that we lived, and then also at college. But to be perfectly honest, and don't get me wrong, I adore the French language, but perhaps because I had to study it and speak it, I never really felt a deep, visceral attachment to it. Then, when I was 19, I went to visit an older lady friend in Florence, my first trip to Italy. And I felt a strong pull to the language and to the place, to the extent that when I returned to college, I tentatively mapped out a way of making Italian become part of my education and my life. My plan was to go to Middlebury summer school to get a strong foundation in the language, then cross-register at UC Berkeley to take more language and eventually literature courses. And then I'd spend a full year in Italy as a junior in college. And that's pretty much what happened. Of course, back then, I had no idea that I would go on to live in Italy after college or that I would become a literary translator, although I always loved creative writing and books and languages and storytelling.
So you started reading Italian literature too at that time?
I started reading Italian literature after 2 years of studying it, maybe one and a half. I jumped right in.
Which is the first book that you read and you really liked it in Italian literature?
What is the first book I read in Italian? I think it must have been some short stories by Italo Calvino. Amazing writer. And I read it in Italian, yes. That was the first book in Italian that I read.
So what do you think are the important milestones in your career as a translator?
Well, I'd have to say that there are several key moments. Studying with Professor Mario Moffa at Middlebury, that school that I mentioned before, the summer school, was definitely a milestone. He communicated both an elegant erudition and a kindness that inspired me to continue on my path. I'd also have to say that everything to do with my first published translation in 2001 was a milestone. Obtaining my first contract, signing it, which was with City Lights, an honor in itself. Doing the actual work, the process of translating, living in that space, that bubble, moving between languages, researching words, places, and terms, while writing creatively in my own mother tongue. collaborating with the editor on the corrections was amazing. And then, of course, at the end, holding the book in my hands and reading a review of it in the New York Times. There was one last milestone that's important to mention, and that is joining the Penn Translation Committee in New York City, where I lived for 15 years until 2009, and joining the American Literary Translators Association, because they both gave me a sense of fellowship that really balanced out the solitary nature of this work.
Now, tell us about the author Domenico Sternone, the Italian author of The House on Viaggemito.
This is where it gets a little complicated. So, Domenico Sternone was born in Naples in 1943. Like the narrator of The House on Viaggemito, which can be defined as a work of autofiction, Sternone was a secondary school teacher for many years, and in fact, several of his early novels revolve around schools, teaching, education, how we learn, what we learn. He has published 23 novels, a vast number of essays, introductions, and screenplays, and one play. It would be remiss of me not to mention his supposed connection to the anonymous figure of Elena Ferrante, but I have to admit that all those theories are not very interesting to me. I'm interested in the writer of The House on Viaggemito. He's a man of vast talent, commitment, sensitivity, and self-awareness. Sternone is as capable of bringing irony and humor to the page as he is of expressing tender moments of grace. It is this multiplicity that I appreciate most in Sternone's writing.
Now, the book, The House on Viaggemito, is about a struggling artist. Would you please elaborate?
Yeah, sure. The book is actually about so much more than a struggling artist. And honestly, I'm not even sure that I can describe everything that it is about. Critics and professors might be better at that. But let me try and tell you what resonates about the book for me. The narrator, an established writer, is trying to come to terms with his complex relationship with his terribly difficult father, a railway worker and a painter, a man who feels that he was born to become a world-renowned artist, but who claims that he was forced to defer his dream because he had to provide for his family, a fact that he never, ever lets them forget. The father is a fantastic storyteller and myth-maker, as well as a liar. He's demanding, cruel, a real braggadocio. He is often very physically violent with his wife, which marks the narrator deeply and causes him to question and then carefully modulate his own interactions with women throughout his life. From the very opening lines of the novel, we perceive the father's reprehensible actions and the son's need to both define and distance himself from the man. I'm going to read a line, the opening line of the book. When my father told me he hit my mother only once in 23 years of marriage, I didn't even bother replying. A long time had passed since I had challenged any of his stories with their fabricated events, dates, and details. When I was a boy, I always saw him as a liar, and his lies embarrassed me as if they were my own. Now, as an adult, it didn't even seem to me like he was lying. He truly believed his words could recreate facts according to his desires or regrets. So, over the course of the novel, which is divided into three sections, the narrator resuscitates the detailed anecdotes he heard over and over from his father about his life as a child, as a young artist, and as the head of the household, before, during, and after World War II in Naples. The narrator takes us deep down into the stories, exploring the places and people, and then stepping back, allowing himself, the narrator, to get to a place where he can reflect on it all, where he can try and separate fact from fiction, make sense of things, examine his own process of remembering, and gradually come to an awareness, even though it is not the awareness he expects. The father is simultaneously odious, a source of pathos, and even amusing at times. The son is determined, exacting, relentless, and terribly hard on himself. One of the aspects that fascinates me most about this book is how the son blends into and then separates from his father. Where does one man end and the next begin? What do we pass on? And how do we differentiate ourselves from our parents? What does love look like in all its manifestations? How do we build a foundation when the ground beneath us is constantly crumbling? These are some of the questions the book asks.
So what kind of interaction you had with the author while translating it?
Well, while translating The House on Via Gemito, which took about 9 months, I had no interaction with the author at all. And that's just how I like it. After I completed the translation, I contacted Starnone with a few questions, and he very graciously replied. Then, in May 2023, I met him at the Salone del Libro, the book fair, in Turin, which was a very moving moment for me. And I have since translated a second book of his, entitled The Mortal and Immortal Life of the Girl from Milan, which is due out this October. And another superb book about family, language, the imagination, and the power of memory.
I gather that one of the most difficult things in translation is to handle dialect. And this novel is full of Neapolitan dialect, as the story happens in Naples. How did you handle the dialect part of the translation?
All right, so to a large extent, Neapolitan dialect is used in the novel to express the father's disgust with others for the whole system, for the people around him he perceives as idiots who hold him back from reaching his full potential, right? The utterances in dialect are often very vulgar, but they have a resounding truth to them. They speak of his origins, and at times they're musical and rich in historical references and tradition. I chose to leave some words of dialect in the English version because, first of all, they deserve their own space, okay, as words. Secondly, some terms simply can't be translated. And thirdly, I wanted the reader to have the full experience of reading this constantly shifting compendium of life and awareness. In much the same way that an Italian reader might read the original with a sense of fascination at the dialect, so should the English reader, without disorienting them entirely. I would say that basically it was a balancing act. I translated a lot of the epithets, but I left others, colorful and creative ones, for the reader to imagine, to try and whisper out loud to themselves.
Please read a paragraph or two from the novel and... Before you do that, I want to make a comment on the cover page of the novel. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad that you like it. So I've chosen a passage that pertains to that cover, to the painting that you see on the cover of the book, which is called The Drinkers, and it was actually done by Domenico Starnone's real-world father, Federico. And this passage is a central part of the book. In it, the narrator recalls how, while he was posing for the painting, as the boy pouring water, he noticed something that could destroy his father's great efforts, a problem of perspective. I believe I stayed in that position day in and day out for weeks on end. I'm a tightly knotted and taut rope. Time goes by, nausea hits, I feel feverish. I start hallucinating. I'm dreaming with my eyes wide open, or maybe they're closed, I'm not sure. But the vision is perfectly clear, either way, when something odd takes place. The empty demijohn I'm holding starts to gush water. But the water doesn't spill into a glass. It splashes onto the tomatoes, the plate. It wets the coarse cloth, spatters the grapes. It's soaked up by the earth and the doughy part of the bread. I flinch as I realize something terrible. In my mind's eye, I quickly complete Luigi's arm. I place an imaginary glass in his hand and have him extend it toward the demijohn. I'm overcome with despair and feel like I'm going to die. My position is all wrong. The water will forever spill onto the tomatoes, the plate, the cloth. My father placed me in a position where, even if Luigi reaches out as far as possible, I will never be able to pour the water into his glass. As I write this, I try and put order in my thoughts. I look for reasons, I draw on what I have learned over the years. Back then, however, I felt the urgent need to save Federico. Once he discovered his error, from blaming me or my mother, her relatives, everyone in the family. My heart was exploding with a sense of responsibility, because the destiny of that painting now depended both on my skill as apprentice builder and my filial devotion.
Thank you for your time, and I hope the book goes all the way.
I'm happy where it is now. It's already a huge accomplishment for me. Thank you.